right now on News Talk 107.9, Neil Larson along with Julie Mason. And of course, this week we've been observing the 50th anniversary since the Teton Dam failure and following catastrophe. And Julie, we were actually connected through a listener to our guest that we have on. He actually was in a bulldozer on top of the Teton Dam as it was breaking, and we want to welcome Jay Calderwood to the program. Jay, good morning. We appreciate you taking some time with us.
Good morning.
So I guess tell us this story. First of all, why were you on a bulldozer on top of the Teton Dam on that morning?
Well, about 11 o'clock, they called, I live in Victor, and they called and said, the dam is leaking. I was a general excavation foreman, so of course they'd call me, and so I said, I'll be right out. And I told the wife, I said, I'd probably be back in a couple hours, because the dam was almost full. The water was almost to the top, and it was about to run into the spillway. And I told her, I said, I suppose it's leaking around the spillway, no problem. So it takes about 30, 35 minutes to drive out there. Now, I come around the corner there at the dam. I come around the corner by the overlook point there. I see a whole leak coming out of the side of the dam over against the north embankment. Now, that old man will never get that closed. It was about 10 foot around. But anyway, I drove out on top of the dam. They already had two dozers there. And one of them was the general superintendent. So I walked down and I said, I'll trade you off. And so I got on, and the upstream side of the dam was all covered with riprap, rock about 3 or 4 feet around. And out on the edge of the dam, we could see a whirlpool, a huge whirlpool, kind of like, you know, you're draining your tub.
Yeah.
And about 20, 30 feet around, and we couldn't see the bottom of the tunnel inside, but we'd back up the top of the dam and hook up a load of them big rock and push the edge of the tunnel, funnel, and hoping that, you know, hoping something would suck that in and slow it down or stop it or whatever. We just didn't know what else to do. So one of us had to back up, get a load of rock and push it in while the other one backed up out of the way. The general superintendent was just standing there, and we worked about, I guess, 20 minutes, 30 minutes, or whatever. I don't remember. And he said he felt it settle under him. He's just standing on the side of the dam, and he said it felt it settled, so it waved us off. And I was just right to the edge of the funnel and dropped my, unloaded my dozer load of big rock, and the other dozer backed up on top of the dam and backing off to safety. Now, we was only about 30 feet from the top of the dam, so it wasn't a long travel.
Yeah.
But I backed up on top of the dam, and he took off running to the north embankment, which was only just a little ways away. It was real close because that's where the leak was, against the north embankment. But anyway, there's no room to park a cat over there because of the spillway, so I backed to the south embankment, and I backed up and started backing away, and it caved in front of me. I thought, oh, man, I'm in trouble. But I kept going, and then I suppose the whole thing didn't last much more than a minute. It seemed like forever. But I was backing up. I thought, you know, I could jump. And I thought, well, if I do, I'll fall, and they can go backwards as fast as you can run anyhow.
Yeah.
I knew I wouldn't have time to turn it head out forward, so I just kept backing up. And that about 20-foot sections keep sloughing off as the gap got wider and wider. And I thought, oh, man, I'm not going to make it. I don't remember praying, but I probably did because I was pretty active LDS, and I just don't remember doing it. But I do remember thinking, what will my life do without me? Because I thought I was gone. I thought surely I'd never make it. I know my wife and kids were there. What can they do without me? But anyway, they never caught me, of course. I made it off the edge of the dam. And I walked. Of course, the D9 dozers are pretty large. So I stepped off the deck and walked down the dozer arm and try to get on the ground. I got down on the ground, and I was so weak that I had leaned up against the track to hold myself up because I was so still scared and weak. So that's a quick overrun of it.
So once you reach safety, and by the way, Jay, that is a harrowing story. Just hearing your moment-by-moment description of that and what was going through your mind, thank you for sharing that. I can't imagine what that was like. But once you were physically safe and on the side of the river, did you just kind of stand there and watch it happen, feeling helpless as the rush of water was breaking through that dam?
Oh, my goodness. It was an awful sight. So down below the dam, the water seemed to be circling. And there was a two-story powerhouse just below the tail race of the dam that was there built to generate electricity. And then right below that, across the tail race, was a batch plant where they mixed concrete. That didn't last. Boy, that crushed in just a few minutes. Now, water kept getting deeper and deeper. Pretty quick, the powerhouse was engulfed. I don't remember hearing a noise. There had to have been a loud noise, but I don't remember hearing that. I do remember seeing a mist, feeling a mist of water, and I remember it couldn't have been dust, but it seemed like it was dust, so it must have been all the mist. But after that water got about 15 foot deep and started down the canyon, and I remember watching those cottonwood just be mowed down like a hay mower. It was amazing. It was just really frightening. And I mentioned to the project engineer, I mentioned to him, I hope them people down below have been notified. And he says, yes, they've all been notified earlier when we first noticed the leak. So I'm sure there's nobody didn't drown down there. So, yeah, it was a concern. Definitely was.
So you were one of the just a couple of actual eyewitnesses then of seeing the dam itself just fail right before your eyes.
Right. There's other dozer operator like myself that was off the dam ahead of me. And then the general superintendent and the project engineer all there watching that widen and widen and widen and just create. Oh, my goodness. It was frightening.
So four of you, did you know any of the 11 people that perished in the flood?
No, ma'am, I did not. They were all, one was a young man fishing. I remember fishing down below the dam. One of them, two of them, and one survived and one didn't. But no, I didn't know any people that downstream that were lost their lives.
So tell us, I guess, what happened after that. As you watch that happen, and we kind of know the story of what happened after that, the city of Rexburg and Sugar City, they were notified that it was coming, and there was the big response that way. But what were your moments like in after the Teton Dam broke? And, you know, what did you do after that? Because you live in Victor, so you're upstream, you're out of danger's way where you live. But I'd love to hear your story of what happened in the hours afterwards for you.
Well, of course, I stood there for quite a while talking to the project manager and the other operator, and we just couldn't stand it. Couldn't believe what we'd seen. It was just unbelievable. We just couldn't understand it. So I turned and finally got back my pickup and headed home. I hadn't been there very long, and the general... previous general superintendent called, and the project was done by Morris Knudsen Company. And they had an interest in the Union Pacific Railroad. One of the previous general superintendents called and said, get your crew together. We've got to put that railroad grade back in where it washed out. So that's what I done the next 3.5 months. I got a crew together and we went down and put the railroad grade, but just the grade. We didn't put the tracks or anything. And they done that. The railroad done that themselves, but we put the grade back in.
Yeah.
That's what I done the next, 2.5 months.
What was your family doing on that day? I'm sure they were. They knew where you were at, so they were nervous. But it's obviously pre-cell phone, and there was no way to get in touch with you. What was that reunion like when you finally did return to your home and to your family?
My wife told me that on the news, and a neighbor came over and sat with her and told her the situation, that somehow they knew I was out there. I don't remember how they knew, but they knew that I was out there working on the dam at the time. And so they come and sat with my wife, waiting for news to see if I was safe or not. And I pulled in the driveway. The wife was started crying because she's so happy to see me. They had no way of knowing whether I survived or not, or whatever happened. So it was a good homecoming for me, I guess.
We just want to say thank you for joining us today and sharing your story.
Well, you're more than welcome. Thank you.
All right, Julie, when we come back, we're going to hear more stories as we interview an author on this 50th anniversary of the Teton Dam flood.
It's just fascinating to hear the stories. And there's so much more besides the 11 deaths. So important that we remember those 11 deaths. But there was a lot in the lead up to the build of the dam. And it's just really fascinating to get the entirety of the story.
Nathaniel Gee joins us to talk about his book coming up right here on News Talk 107.9 after the news.